The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is the Big Show on your Wednesday afternoon. Calgary Flames falling 3-2 at the hands of the Toronto Maple Leafs last night. They're getting set to take on the Tampa Bay Lightning, a Stanley Cup rematch from 2004. Yes, we still hate Tampa Bay. That one coming up for you on the airwaves tomorrow. It's a 5:30 start. The pregame show at 4:30 with Pat Steinberg and Peter Labardius, and then Peter Maher joins the conversation at 5:30 for the play-by-play of that one. What'd you make of the Flames last night? One goal loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yes, it would have been nice if the Flames could have got that victory and knocked off Toronto. Really put a dent, a huge dent in their playoff hopes and continued the misery for the Leafs. Instead, the Flames unable to get the job done, however. Another one-goal game. It's now a franchise record for one-goal games in a season. It's got to make you happy if you're a Flames fan to see year one of a rebuild and the Flames to be this competitive at this point in time. A lot of positives going forward in the future for the Calgary Flames. Coming up here at the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to head to Boston. Joe Haggerty going to join the program. A lot of talk about Jerome McGinley. The resurgence of Jerome McGinley hits the 30-goal mark once again. He's been one of the best players in the NHL. He's coming off a first-place finish as Players of the Week in the National Hockey League, Players of the Month in the NHL as well for the month of March. A great turnaround for Jerome McGinley. He's got the Boston Bruins absolutely on a tear right now. They look like they're the team to beat in the Eastern Conference, and you can make an argument that really how good the Western Conference is at the high-end talent with the San Jose's, the Anaheim's, the St. Louis. Really, does any of those teams have a chance to take on the Boston Bruins? So Joe Haggerty is going to join the program, talk a bit about that. Speaking of teams in the Western Conference, the Anaheim Ducks, 49 wins. They're one win away from hitting the 50 plateau. They have 106 points. They lead the Pacific Division right now over the San Jose Sharks by that 1 point. Tonight they host the Edmonton Oilers at the Honda Center in Anaheim. And earlier today, their head coach, Bruce Boudreau, joined our friends on Hockey Central at noon in Toronto. We'll play that conversation for you right now.
Kiprios says there's more pressure in the Stanley Cup playoffs for Carey Price to win than there was at the Olympic Winter Games in Sochi. What do you think of that?
Well, I've never been to the Olympics, so I wouldn't know. But I know what? It's the pressure of a whole country versus the pressure of the Montreal Canadiens fans, I guess.
It's pretty close, I guess.
Which is a greater fan base.
What do you think of that comeback the other night over the Jets?
Well, it was really a lot of fun when it was done. It wasn't fun the first half of the game because it was like two totally different games, the best and the worst of how you can play. And hopefully you don't have to do it too often because you can't allow four goals a game in this league anymore and hope to win on a regular basis.
Did you kick over a garbage can or give them a speech?
I think I said something to them in between periods.
You diagrammed it out.
There was no diagram.
Say you diagrammed it.
It was coming from the heart. That was it.
Bruce,
I've heard that heart speech before.
Yeah, exactly. Bruce, I got to ask you a question. And there's nobody better to explain this than you. I see Ryan Getzlaf with 31 goals, 83 points, and a plus 27. And I see Alex Ovechkin with 72 points and a minus 36. How can Getzlaf be a plus 27 and Ovechkin a minus 36? It absolutely doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know what? It doesn't make any sense to me either. I mean, it blows my mind coaching Alex for 4 years. He was always in the plus 30s to 40s. But when you hear a stat like I heard yesterday that he hasn't got an even strength point in March. I mean, it's pretty mind-boggling for the amount of ice time he plays. And if you have that kind of number and you're on for any goals against, those minuses add up in a hurry.
Bruce, you think of Ovechkin and how strong he is and how he's able to fight. He can't score 5-on-5. And it's unexplainable why this guy can't score 5-on-5.
It is right now. I mean, the first half of the year, he was, I thought, quite frankly, it was a good distribution between power play goals and regular strength goals. This is a real anomaly. You know, he looked so watching the game last night. You know, I felt really bad. He looked for him. He looked very frustrated.
Bruce Boudreau is with us, coach of the Anaheim Ducks, former coach of the Washington Capitals on Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park, with Darren Millard, Nick Kyprios, and Doug McLean. Hiller, Anderson, you have a 1-2 punch there. Yes. You're a guy that hasn't hesitated to switch goaltenders. Is Hiller your overwhelming number one guy right now?
Well, I mean, not right now, Freddie's played awful well. We still consider Hilly our number one, but we're riding the hot hand in Anderson, and we figure, you know, the last five games of the season, you know, Hilly will get a lot more work and, you know, hopefully just be at his best come day one of the playoffs.
Is there one that's better inside your division than the other? Would you play that game almost like a relief pitcher because of the stakes to get out of the Pacific Division right now?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if I play that game. When it comes down to it, it'll be who's played better against what team. You know, it's like if we were baseball and we were a platoon system almost. That's the way I look at our team, because we pretty well interchange three players a game, and the goalies are a little bit the same in that. But, you know, Anderson's never faced the playoff pressure. Hiller has done it. Hiller's faced the Olympic pressure. He's still my guy.
See, there we're comparing playoff pressure and Olympic pressure again. We're right back to where we started, Gabby.
Bruce,
sorry.
Let me ask you, I want to go back to Getzlaf and Perry. They're your leaders, obviously, when it comes to needing a big goal, but they really are special players. How do they differ from other leaders you've coached or had in the past?
Well, I mean, they're special people. I think both of them. And they're not, how do you word it? It's they're just regular guys that they say, you know, like last night, Perry had 16 minutes of ice. There was no complaints. It was just he knows what his role is, and when he's out there, he does it. Getzlaf is the same. He plays a little bit more because he kills penalties more than Corey does. But I just think they're both special people. I could bring them in and talk about anything, and they're not high and mighty, and they just want to win and do whatever they can for the team. I'm not trying to say that other guys have had more like that, but these guys are special in that respect.
Bruce, I if somebody asked me going into the playoffs, San Jose, St. Louis, Anaheim, who has the better chance, I would be a little bit concerned with Anaheim's depth as compared to those teams. Depth, especially at the forward position. And then I look and I say, okay, Nick Bonino, Matthew Perreault, and Andrew Cogliano. 20 goals, 18-21, and they're your third, fourth, and fifth leading scorers. Where have these guys, I mean, what has happened to these guys that they become that second tier?
Maybe it's him.
Tier?
Maybe it's...
It's
Gabby.
Well, I'm sure he'll tell me that, but we'll let him answer.
Well, one thing,
do you agree with Nick first?
those names aren't going to scare you, you know.
But it's amazing.
I think it's amazing, but I mean, they're good players that nobody knows about. If
right.
they were in Toronto, they'd be talking, you know, the same thing as they would talk about a Lopel, for example. Mm-hmm. I think as a scorer. But being in Anaheim, no one's heard of them. But I mean, if you look at the famous names on all those teams you mentioned, absolutely, those other teams are well ahead of us. But I mean, the guys that even guys like say Kyle Palmieri, who we haven't heard of, but was the leading scorer in the American Hockey League, and it's a lot like the Tampa players that you've never heard of, but right. were really good players because they're young. And I think that's where we are. We're pretty well a four-line team, and you'd be shocked that you look at all the things, and I think we're second in the league in goals for.
Yeah.
Just barely behind Chicago's. But these guys contribute on a daily basis that nobody knows about.
Bruce Boudreau joining us on a game day. Doesn't throw off your routine at all to hook up with Hockey Central?
Doesn't mess up the pregame meal, does it?
I don't think I miss too many meals. It's a perfect time, actually. It's before meetings and before everybody's gone on, and I've already done most of my pre-scouting against Edmonton. So it's a quiet time right now.
You love talking hockey, though, don't you?
Pretty well, yeah. I don't really know too much about anything else, so I better talk a lot about hockey.
If you had it your way, there'd be a 24/7 crew following you right now.
So, yeah, I don't know what they'd see, but, I don't know where I'm going with that. Hockey's been my life for as long as I can remember, and if I can talk about it, it's the one thing I can talk about where I think I know a little bit about it.
Where's this season rank in your time in the National Hockey League for just enjoying it? Because outside of opening night when you had that kerfuffle with Patrick, you got off to such a great start, and you've had a really nice, consistent run.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a great year. It's, the great thing about getting off to a great start is you have that's like money in the bank when you go through a little bad spell. And so it's been a lot easier on our nerves when we went through, a 500 stretch for about 12 games there. So, but other than that, the one thing about that makes it special is this group of guys that I'm coaching this year is a really, really fun group to be around. And they all care. They're very serious about the game. And it makes coming to the rink every day a pleasure.
Mac would be able to answer this as well. Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, and Doug McLean with Bruce Boudreau, the Anaheim Ducks, and Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park. Do you do less coaching in a season like this?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a continuous basis. Because I know we have some older guys on our team, but we got a lot of young guys that we have to keep. As a coach, if you let anything slide for a week, they forget, and you got to keep reminding, and that's where the video comes in, and almost to nausea. But it's something. If you don't repeat, then it's not gonna get done right.
What do you hear more often said in your dressing room? We feel sorry for what's going on with Randy in Toronto, or we expected this to happen?
I hear neither.
Okay.
I mean, very little talk. It's more about if they're talking about the Leafs, it's the media coverage when they're losing. It's
about
everywhere.
How fair we are?
About how you can't escape it. And me being a Toronto boy, I watch them all the time. So I was glad to see them win last night.
There you go. That is Bruce Boudreau, head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, talking all things Anaheim as the Ducks getting set to take on the Edmonton Oilers tonight. That one coming up with the Anaheim Ducks. 106 points, 1 point up on the San Jose Sharks for the lead in the Pacific Division. Also have a couple games in hand on them as well.
What do you think about the Ducks when it comes to the playoffs? You think they got a playoff run in them? The back end doesn't really... doesn't really do it for me. I mean, everybody knows about Perry and Getzlaff, and they've got the forwards. I just don't know if they did enough to fix some of those things.
They're shaping up to take on Minnesota in round one, and I think they could easily get by the Wild in the first round, but then they're going to come up into that second round, and they're going to have to take on a San Jose or whoever comes out of that Colorado-Chicago series, and I don't know. I would probably not take them to go much farther past the second round, just how deep the West is. I'm not saying they're not a good team. They are a very good team. But the West is pretty deep with a lot of talented teams at the top end. So whoever goes into the second round is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's with Minnesota, we're back on their bandwagon, right? We think they're going to be just fine. They sort of had some big wins there that they needed. And maybe if they can get, by hook or by crook, some sort of goaltending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they give Anaheim a bit of a... a bit of a run.
I think Minnesota would be a team that would give him a run. Absolutely. While they're a deep team too, but the goaltending is their biggest question mark in Minnesota right now, so they got to find a way to fix that. They bring in Ilya Brizgalov. I don't think he's been what they've expected from him. I'm not sure they've given him the reins yet to be their number one guy. Maybe they'll let him start the playoffs just because of the experience that he has. He has more experience than Darcy Kemper does, but Darcy Kemper's not been a bad goalie for them either.
Yeah, but not obviously playoff ready or experienced, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see, but that's, you know, we'll see what happens. We're to talk about Boston Bruins hockey next, hey? That's going to be interesting to see. Got to see them live in Phoenix when I was down there, and they were a team that were kind of, they played the night before, they clinched their playoff spot and beat Colorado, and then they were kind of just sort of going through the motions a little bit in the first period, and then they revved it up a little bit, and then Oliver Ekman-Larsson decided to run Jerome Iginla, and you know, we've seen it here before. That's when Iginla gets, you know, pissed off, and now he's engaged in the game. Mm-hmm. And it was neat to see how they kind of turned it up and got after it. And they've been lights out for a while now. But they got a big game tonight against Detroit, which they're back in the same conference, original six teams, all those cliches. But for a rivalry night, that's a good one for a Wednesday night for NBC to have.
Yeah, that's a good game, and going to be entertaining to see for those Boston Bruins in Detroit. I mean, they're a good team, Boston, and we'll hear a lot about them as Joe Haggerty's going to join us to talk about them and Jerome Iginla, the resurgence of Jerome Iginla. He's back to one of the elite players in the National Hockey League, so we'll hear his thoughts on why he's so good. I guess he has a little bit of a closer look at it than we do.
Yeah, for sure. We'll do that next. Big show right here at Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Mobile, magazine, TV, online, and on your radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Listen like never before. Talking hockey in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Seems we have a bit of a concern over the goaltending for the Detroit Red Wings. We're not sure if Jimmy Howard is the guy after all. Every time I think that he's going to kind of turn the corner, he'll let in a bad goal and look kind of bad doing it. And then you'll think, okay, he's done. Forget it. Got to go a different direction. And then he'll make some big saves. And he is...
He's up and down.
Yep.
18-18, 500 record, 18-18-11.
Injured a little bit this year.
Goals against. Yeah, he's been hurt a bit. And Jonas Gustafsson, who's come into Detroit as the backup, has been a lot better. He's, you know, better numbers, less goals against, higher save percentage, a 16-4-3 record for Jonas Gustafsson in there as well. So if you're the Detroit Red Wings, and we were just talking about it, guys that are becoming potential free agents, Ryan Miller.
I would go after Ryan Miller so bloody hard if I was Detroit.
Mm-hmm. You can get Ryan Miller. There's Yaroslav Halak from who's in Washington now.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, but probably the goaltending situation is something you want to solidify if you're the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, you'd... We'll see where they end up, if they can win a round or two and be okay with it. Mm-hmm. I think I'd be shocked if Shea Weber doesn't kind of get traded to some team like that, you know, whether it's a Detroit or maybe Edmonton. You know, we've heard about that, where you know, if you're Nashville, what do you do with it, with that asset?
I think you got to trade him if you're Nashville. You've got enough, you know, guys on the back end. You have really nothing up front, and there's all the rumors that Shea Weber headed to the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for a guy like Jordan Eberle or something like that. If I'm the Nashville Predators, that's a deal I'm more than willing to do, because you've got Seth Jones, who you just drafted fourth overall. You've got, the Ryan Ellis's of the world in there as well, too. So you've got a lot of things coming up on the back end if you're the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, so you could kind of, and they've got... Philip Forsberg, do they not?
Too? Yeah, Philip Forsberg coming up as well to help them out offensively, but really not a whole lot of pieces offensively for that team right now.
But that's the thing that you have to, and you don't have piles of cash to pay people, right? So you've got to be careful in Nashville, so you wonder about that. But, you know, getting back to Detroit, here's a game where it's like, okay, you're on national television down in the States. This is a rivalry game. Here's the Boston Bruins. This is the team that you used to be like back in the day when you know could roll three or four lines and really put it two teams. This is one of those statement games for them. Yeah. Like I think they're going to be okay for a playoff spot. It's not a done deal yet, but you know, a good showing tonight goes a long way as they slowly get their injured guys back. But Detroit always seems to have guys injured. It seems to be that's how they play, basically, is injured.
Yeah, and tonight's game, Datsyuk and Alfredson both going to be sidelined. Obviously, Datsyuk getting closer and closer to getting back in the lineup. Alfredson going to sit this one out for the Wings. So that's obviously a little bit of a tough blow for them. But for the Detroit Red Wings, they should be ready to go in this one tonight. 84 points. They're 2 points up on Toronto right now. They always seem to find a way to get into the playoffs, the Detroit Red Wings. It doesn't matter who it is. And they've got guys like Gustav Nyquist, who's been absolutely unreal this year for them.
Do you think they regret doing that David Lenguon deal? He's been.
Hey Joe, it's Will. I don't think so. I mean, I wouldn't regret it if I was them right now at all. I mean, you bring in a guy who's got some, you know, veteran experience. You were missing your guys like Zetterberg. You're missing guys like Datsyuk, Alfredson going down right now as well. So you needed to bring some veterans into this team, and that's exactly what they did. So,
but he's just been so-so.
Yeah, he has been so-so. It's going to be a good one tonight, the Boston Bruins and the Detroit Red Wings. And we've got Joe Haggerty joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline from CSN New England. Joe, I guess for the Boston Bruins right now, they're rolling. They've been on fire of late. And one of the big reasons is former Flame Jerome Iginla, who's now hit the 30-goal plateau once again. I guess let's start there with Jerome. I mean, is he one of the big reasons why the Bruins are having so much success, or is he the biggest reason?
Well, I think he's definitely one of the reasons for sure, and I think he's fit in well. But I mean, let's be honest. This team is a wagon. You know, they've won a cup. They're an elite team. I think what he's done has maybe taken them even a level beyond, and certainly he's given them something they never had on that line before with Milan Lucic and David Krejci, which is a really consistent night in, night out performer. You know, even when Jerome Iginla wasn't scoring goals at the beginning of the year, he was in the right places. He was doing the right things. He was hustling on the back check. He was playing the right way. You know, and I think that allowed David Krejci and Milan Lucic to have their most consistent seasons as pros with the Bruins, whereas in the past, Nathan Horton was a very streaky guy that would be up and down. He would disappear and not play hard at times, and then other times he would just be a house of fire. And I think in that sense, Jerome Iginla has really brought something special and unique to the table for this team that seemingly already has everything. And it's going to be really interesting to see you know, what he's able to do going forward, because this month, if he can play anything close to what he did in the month of March when he, you know, carried the team through that hot streak and scored 13 goals and won number one star of the month honors, then they've got something really special. I think that is the one last hurdle that they want to see with him now that he's reached the 30-goal mark is to perform in the postseason like Nathan Horton did. He might have been a streaky guy in the regular season, but Horton brought it in the playoffs, and I think they want to see that out of Iginla as well moving forward. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that could inspire them as well, being very hungry for that first cup. That's something you like to have on every single playoff team.
Safe to say that there's probably a pretty good appetite right now to re-sign Jerome Iginla to some sort of a contract extension?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen until after the year. They want to look at the entire body of work. I think a lot of it is tied because money is tied up in multi-year deals, and the Bruins are close to the cap. I don't think there's anything they can do right now, even if they wanted to. They're going to wait until after the dust has settled. But I also think it's smart to take a look at Jerome in the postseason and see what he does with Krejci and Lucic, see where this team goes, and to see what happens when the playoff pressure really starts to mount. You know, he was not put in a position to succeed last year, Jerome, when he was in Pittsburgh. He was playing on the off wing. He was playing on a third line. He wasn't playing with Sidney Crosby. He really, I don't think, got a fair shake in Pittsburgh. And, you know, he was not a factor in that conference final against the Bruins, partially as a result of that. And I really think you want to see him and how he performs in the postseason before you make a determination on him. But I think all signs point towards them absolutely wanting him back. I think he wants to come back. He's been sort of noncommittal about it, but you would expect that out of a veteran player. The one really interesting thing for the Bruins is that they're going to be up against the cap.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to sign him to a multi-year deal for, like, you know, $6 million a year. I think you might be looking at Jerome Iginla going year to year and signing something similar to what he did this year, which is, you know, something that will make him around $5 million and maybe more. If he hits incentives, I think that makes the most sense for the Bruins, and probably should for him at this point. You know, what does he need more money for? I think for him, he wants to be in a good situation and be where he's happy, and I think he found that in Boston.
Yeah, and with the salary cap going up as well next year, it could be a big help for the Boston Bruins there. With his playing with Milan Lucic, how much has that helped Jerome Iginla throughout this season? It seems like, for me, he's a guy that Milan Lucic can go and get into those dirty areas and be that physical power forward guy on that line, so Jerome Iginla maybe doesn't have to as much as he had to in Calgary or even that short time in Pittsburgh. How much has Milan Lucic helped Jerome?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier how much Jerome has helped Krejci and Lucic be more consistent this year, and I think that certainly works both ways. Mm-hmm. And that Lucic has definitely helped Iginla. You know, having somebody who is that gigantic, mean, violent wrecking ball that goes in and destroys teams on the forecheck and really busts things up and plays that physical role and goes and digs pucks out of the corner and does all the dirty work. It does allow Jerome Iginla to not have to do that as much at 36 years old and to be in positions to score at certain points. And, you know, there is, though, a setup with the Bruins where they like to have those big bookend power forwards on that line and like them both to get in on the forecheck and really throw bodies around and get physical. And he's still done a fair share of that for Boston, probably not as much as he did in Calgary. And I think in that respect, Lucic has definitely helped him out. But I think just being around, I'm not sure how many times he's played with players as good as David Krejci and Milan Lucic on this line for the Bruins. And to be on a power play with Chara and Krug and Lucic and Krejci and to be around all this talent where it allows him to really succeed, I think that's put Jerome Iginla in a place to really do well, and it's helped him out as well. You know, I think it certainly works both ways, both for Jerome and the rest of the Bruins.
Just one more on the Iginla thing. One of our texters brought up a pretty good point. The travel in the Eastern Conference for a guy Jerome's age, he's getting up near, you know, the 40-year-old, you know, he's just south of 40 years old now, but the Eastern Conference travel schedule, no doubt a lot of teams are closer than he was here, used in the West, kind of long travel days. Is that something that you think could help a guy like Jerome Iginla too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, most of the games, pretty much all the games they play in the Eastern Conference, they're going to be home that night after they play, you know, by like midnight, 1 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning, you know. And I think that is definitely something that's conducive to a guy that's an aging player and somebody that, you know, wants to have things go a little easier for them in the regular season when age starts to creep up there. And it's definitely part of the benefit of being in the Eastern Conference. It's a great point, and it's just, you know, an advantage that being in the East has. It's like that for every single team, top to bottom. And you know, teams like Calgary, Vancouver, some of the other teams that are in the Western Conference, they get a little bit more of the short end of the stick as far as that goes. But it's interesting, you know. I remember reading a lot last year, and it was people that watched him while he was with Calgary and saying, you know, he'd slow down skating, maybe the hands weren't the same, he didn't seem like the same kind of player anymore. And you wonder how much of that was age with him at 36 years old and how much of that was just being in a situation that, you know, he knew that they weren't going to be a Stanley Cup contender, and it was hard mm-hmm. for a veteran player to be the same guy that he was 10 years before. Because I got to be honest with you, he's done some things this year. Between moving around skating-wise, between scoring goals with the hands, that I think there's still a lot left in that tank for a few more years going forward.
Joe Haggerty from CSN New England joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. The Boston Bruins, number one team in the National Hockey League right now. They're taking on the Detroit Red Wings tonight. Tuukka Rask in net, Joe. I mean, he's been huge this year once again. I don't think that's something shocking or unexpected from you. League leader among, you know, goals against, their save percentage. He's in the top there as well with the wins as well. How good has he been this year? I mean, you see him closer every day. Just how important is he to this team?
Yeah, he's been outstanding, and you know, in all honesty and due diligence, you've got to also sort of point out that he's in a system that's great. He's with great defensive players like Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron. I think Claude Julien's defensive system is very friendly towards goaltenders, and it's no coincidence that Bruins goalies are always among the league leaders in goaltending categories and seem to put up big numbers. But I think Tuukka was in a huge year this year where he had to prove it. He had to show that he was a number one goalie that could play an entire full NHL season, you know, play 60 or more games, really be the man for a good Stanley Cup caliber team. Last year, he proved that he could take them to the Stanley Cup final during the playoffs. This year, it was about proving that he was the guy and he could do it. You know, he'd already gotten the hard part out of the way. He got the contract in the offseason that was paying him a lot of money. But I think that put a lot of pressure on him going into this year. And at one point in January, right before the Olympics, he seemed to wear down just a little bit. It was kind of in that Doug Day portion of the season. But aside from that, he's been the best goaltender in the league. And I think he's going to end up winning the Vezina Trophy running away.
Yeah.
When you look at the save percentage, when you look at the goals against, when you look at the league high seven shutouts, the way he performed during that winning streak and that stretch where they went 15-1-1 in March, he's been the best goalie by far. And, you know, it's a great situation with the Bruins because he's young and he's only going to get better and better as he gets more experience and he gets more confidence.
Defensively on this team, they add Andre Mazaros and Corey Potter around the trade deadline time. Dennis Seidenberg on long-term injured reserve right now, but he could be back at some point in the playoffs. How important is that depth that this team added on the back end?
Yeah, it's huge. They have eight NHL-caliber guys right now, and they hope that Adam McQuaid maybe can ramp it up and potentially be healthy for the start of the playoffs as well. He hasn't been on the ice in a game since the middle of January, so that would actually give them even a ninth body if he comes back. And, you know, we all know that you need at least to be able to go four deep on the left side and the right side once the playoffs start, just because of attrition and how defensemen start dropping like flies and the abuse that they take from the forecheck and from, you know, players on other teams targeting them in physical nasty playoff series. So they definitely needed that, and they needed another veteran guy, a guy that could play the left side and the right side. They got that in Andre Mazaros. He's been very helpful for them. He's actually been excellent since he came over. 5 points and a plus seven in the nine games that he's played since the trade. I think that he's probably going to be the guy that starts the playoffs as a scratch, and they're going to go with the young guys and the established six that they had after Dennis Seidenberg went down, which means Dougie Hamilton would be with Chara, and Matt Barkowski would be the left side, second D-pairing guy. But I also think they're going to be ready and willing and able to go to Mazaros at the moment's notice if anybody struggles or if an injury happens. And that is as good as gold in the playoffs. You have to have a ton of good NHL-caliber defensemen to get through a long, deep run into the postseason.
And what are you expecting from a guy like Zdeno Chara? I mean, he's getting up there at age 37 years old, and the frame that that guy has, it's got to be getting, you know, a little bit more difficult than most people when you're that size, at getting older and older, to sustain the level that he has. But, I mean, what have you seen from him this year, and what are you expecting from him in the playoffs and looking to the future?
Yeah, you tend to see the big body defensemen wear out fast, right? And they kind of disappear quickly. There's definitely a past history of that, and I don't think he's, you know, really shown that over a long course of time. I think what you do see now is that he does get tired and he does run out of gas from time to time, especially when he plays heavy minutes. I would put it this way, and he did run out of gas last year in the Stanley Cup final against the Blackhawks. I know he was dealing with like a hip pointer issue as well, but it was pretty clear that he was cooked towards the end of that series. And it's really not his fault. I mean, he played 29-plus minutes per game last year during 21 playoff games, getting all the way to the Stanley Cup final at 36 years old. You know, that's kind of a recipe to blow out a guy and to really run a guy into the ground if you play him that much. I think if you have to play Chara 29 to 30 minutes a night every single night during these playoffs, you're probably going to see the same thing happen to him towards the end of the run, because I just don't think physically he can handle that anymore. Now, if you can manage him between, say, 25 to 28 minutes per game, somewhere in that area, and they got him in the low 24s during the regular season, which is the lowest it's been in 10 years for him, I think that's a much better neighborhood to be in. You definitely have to watch it a little more closely now than you maybe did when he was in his late 20s and early 30s. But when he's healthy, when he's got a full tank of gas, when the energy level is good, he's still the most dominant defensive defenseman in the NHL. He's still a guy that puts up huge numbers. And when it comes to playing against the other team's best forwards, when it comes to starting almost, way more than half his shifts in the defensive zone, when it comes to killing penalties, all that stuff, I think he's the single most irreplaceable player when it comes to the NHL as far as everything he brings to the table, and I think you'll see that again during this postseason.
Joe Haggerty from CSN New England joining us as the Big Show continues here on your Wednesday afternoon. Just a couple more for you, Joe. Looking at this team, the Tyler Seguin trade from that happened on the offseason of last year, now that you've had almost a full season with what you've got in return, is there any regrets from that trade? And I know the Boston Bruins, I mean, you can, obviously not their first place, but you look at what Tyler Seguin has done in Dallas right now, but getting Louis Erickson and O'Reilly Smith part of that trade as well. What's kind of the sense now of that trade, now that you've had almost a full season since it's happened?
The Bruins have the deepest forward group they've ever had under Claude Julien. This is an even deeper group than what they had when they won the Stanley Cup 3 years ago. And they wouldn't have that depth. They wouldn't have a guy like Louis Erickson with Carl Soderberg on the third line that's absolutely terrorizing third defenseman pairings right now and is going to be a huge factor in the playoffs because third D pairings just can't handle those two on the third line. That kind of thing is, you wouldn't have that if you still had Tyler Seguin, because you wouldn't have Riley Smith and you wouldn't have Louis Erickson. I think on that level, they're a better team having made that deal. Sure, they lost an explosive player and a guy that's really flourished in Dallas and I think is in a perfect system for him. I don't think he ever would have put up those kind of offensive numbers in Boston. I don't think anybody puts up those kind of offensive numbers in Boston in Claude Julien's system. It's just not how it's done here. The ice time is down. The minutes are spread out and the points are spread out a little bit more. You know, Jerome McGinley is only the second 30-goal scorer for the Bruins since Phil Kessel left town 5 years ago. So I think in that respect, you know, they're a better team because of the depth. But I also think on a bigger level, Tyler Seguin needed kind of a kick in the butt and he needed a wake-up call when he left Boston. He just wasn't a mature pro when he was here. And I think the only way that was going to happen was by moving him somewhere else and kind of giving him a shock to the system. And give him credit. He's learned his lesson. He's played well. He's been a good pro in Dallas. And he's doing all the right things. I don't think that ever would have happened if he had stayed in Boston. He was too comfortable and he had too many other things going on here that were distractions away from the ice.
And what final one for you. When you look at this Boston Bruins team, they're very good this year, but even in the future, when you look at what they've have coming up, you know, under contract for next year and 2 years and 3 years down the road, the core of this team, Peter Chiarelli has done an excellent job of having them all locked up to long-term deals. So we're talking the Boston Bruins being a top team in the NHL this year, but they're going to be the same team. They can get Jerome McGinley under contract, and this team all of a sudden, they're looking like they could have quite the run here for a few years.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, they've got a nucleus that's in its prime right now, and they do have a lot of those guys locked up. And they're in a pretty decent situation, but having those guys locked up, especially the big deals they gave to Patrice Bergeron and Tuukka Rask last summer, has really upped their cap number. And, you know, they're going to have some room after this season when the cap goes up, even though it sounds like it's not going to go up as much as they originally thought. But at the same time, you're also talking about you're going to have to re-sign Riley Smith. You're going to have to re-sign Torrey Krug, a couple of young players that have been extremely good this year. You're going to have to, at some point, extend Johnny Boychuk. I think there are other things going on here and other players that they're going to have to address moving forward. They're going to fill up a lot of that cap space. And that's the reason why I think, at the end of the day, they may have to get Jerome McGinley to agree to something that's got incentives where they can, you know, push the money off to the bonus cushion the following year, just like they've done this year, because they have other players they have to sign as well if they want to keep that nucleus together rather than dealing parts off because of the salary cap issues.
Well, tonight it's the Detroit Red Wings, an original six battle. Should be fun. David Krejci, is he in the lineup tonight? I know he was battling a sore throat. Is he good to go?
Yeah, he should be good to go unless they decide they want to rest him, and I think that's something you may see now that they have Ryan Spooner up. They may have some game-time decisions in these final seven games where they start resting players that have taken on a big workload because they frankly don't need to play these guys. You know, they're in the running right now and in the lead for the President's Cup, but they're going to have the conference and the division, and for them right now it's about resting guys rather than trying to continue to win games and doing everything they can to do that.
Well, Joe, appreciate your time. Thanks for this. It should be a good one tonight. Enjoy it.
You got it. Looking forward to it.
There you go. Joe Haggerty from CSN New England joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. The Boston Bruins taking on the Detroit Red Wings tonight. The Wings battling for their playoff lives, trying to move ahead of Columbus and a little farther ahead of Columbus and the Toronto Maple Leafs in the East wildcard race. As for Boston, It's basically all about staying healthy now and playing out the stretch. They've earned themselves this position where they can kind of coast into the playoffs, although I don't think they're going to want to take that mentality.
No, I don't think they will either, not with their coach, not with those players. And interesting chat you had with Mr. Hegarty there because, you know, are we going to see Jerome McGinley sign an extension? Mm-hmm. You know, he was kind of a put-up-or-shut-up year this year, and he is back to form, so he is certainly deserving of a, if it's not by them, by somebody else, certainly will.
Yeah, and when you can sign him to what they did this year, you know, a $1.8 million cap hit with performance-based incentives there, why wouldn't you bring Jerome McGinley? The cap's going up a little bit. Sign him to that base salary that's really, you know, a huge bargain. Make it performance, you know, base kind of thing for Jerome McGinley. And, I mean, if Jerome really does like it there in Boston, I mean, there's no reason for him not to stay. If that's the one that he feels is the best chance to give him a Stanley Cup. And then again, it comes down to if Boston wins the Stanley Cup this year and Jerome gets that cup, and what does Jerome McGinley do?
Yeah.
Does he go somewhere else? Does he come west?
No way he's retiring, though.
Yeah, I don't think Jerome McGinley's ready to retire yet. I mean, he's made a lot of money in his career. He's won, you know, once he gets that Stanley Cup, he's won all everything there is to win. Maybe, you know, Jerome McGinley looks at coming back west. I'm not saying to the Calgary Flames. I'm saying, you know, to a different team, a place like that. Maybe he goes down south somewhere. It's a bit warmer, too, and kind of finishes out the career.
Yeah, see what goes on. He certainly is a commodity and a guy that I imagine his contract was filled with incentives, and I imagine he is he is going to hit on those bonuses. So I was thinking about this last night as you know, the Flames are officially eliminated from the playoffs. What do we hear about the World Championships and Team Canada and some of the guys? And not just Team Canada, I guess Team Sweden, Team USA, Team Czech. You wonder when we start hearing, you know, that type of stuff.
That conversation will come up after this season. I'll tell you what, I'd be very surprised if Yuri Hudler goes and plays for the Czechs.
I know what I'd tell him if he asked.
Yeah, because now it's a situation where Hudler would be doing the Czechs a favor by going to play for them. He would be helping them out a whole lot. And based on what happened after the Olympics, if I was Yuri Hudler, I'd be telling the Czech kind of hockey federation where they can go.
But unless they said, you know what, we've messed this up. We're changing everything around. We should have had John. We had the wrong guys picking it. Unless something like that happens, maybe
too little, too late. If you're Yuri Hurdler, why would you care now? I mean, you've missed the Olympics. Who knows if the NHL is going back to the other Olympics or where Yuri Hurdler is going to be at his career when you know, the Korean Games come. So I mean, he's probably missed his opportunity to be at the Olympics because of the Czechs, and it's the end of the season now. The season's over. I'm sure Yuri wants to spend time with the family and things like that. So. If I was Yuri Hudler,
they wanted to get Peter Nedved and the guy's son-in-law on the team, so they had to kind of
work out for you?
Not so good.
Yeah, not so good. But I mean, Mark Giordano's a guy who I'm sure would be interested in playing, and I'm sure he's going to be one of the very first calls that Team Canada makes when that comes. Even there's younger guys. I know a lot of people have talked about Sean Monahan's name being up there as well as a guy that.
Yeah, because sometimes they take young guys, like one or two young guys. And what about Backlund for Sweden?
And Backlund
what about
be a Smead
for Czech?
Yes.
Yeah, what about Chris Butler for the Americans?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Once the season ends, I think we're still going to see a lot of Flames in action. Kari Ramo going for Finland as well. Well, there could be all sorts of things going on.
And the reason that I say that is because you were talking about how Jerome McGinley has won every level, and he was always, I think he played in one world championship, and he was always the guy that said, you know what, I got too much. I've done too much, and I'm worn out. I got to take this time off. It'll be interesting to see if the Flames, you know, which guys, does a Mike Camilleri go over? Does, you know.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of interest, and there'll be a few guys that definitely make the trip.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of an Alberta flavor. Right? Yeah. A lot of Oilers and a lot of Flames. Yeah. And Canucks, if you want to get technical about it. And Jets.
Western Canada is going to be well represented.
That's right.
Anywhere from Ontario West is going to be well represented.
Absolutely. We should take a break. We'll be right back. We'll get ready. Pat Steinberg in at 2 o'clock. I'll tell you, big show revs up. We've got, don't forget, Blue Jays baseball joining Progress at 6 tonight. And the Flames head down to Florida. Tampa and Florida back-to-back Thursday, Friday, and then a couple days off in New York, and then it's New Jersey. And then back home for the final two games against Los Angeles and the Winnipeg Jets. It is The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show continues, brought to you by The Comedy Cave. For the comedy you crave, come to The Cave. Tastefully funny, incredibly affordable. Tickets always $10. For dinner specials and showtimes, log on to comedycave.com. Talk talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Kelly Kirsch, Josh Humphreys making way for the one and only Pat Steinberg in after 2 o'clock in a busy show as always. Flames talk, and right now we talk about the Blue Jays as the home opener. I got to catch a little bit of the end of the first one there, not the home opener, their season opener. Good Lord, 9-2 is R.A. Dickey kind of got roughed up a little bit and just got worse and worse and worse. But baseball's a cool sport, lots of games. Come back tomorrow and get to do it again. And, I mean, a real nice story for a guy that has taken the long road to come back as the Jays get some pitching from a guy that needed some good news.
Yeah, Drew Hutchinson comes in and gets 5 1/3 scoreless innings for the Jays in a 4-2 victory. Game 2 of that series, Adam Lind also had a 3-run home run in the first inning of that game. So positive news on all regards for the Jays. And that's baseball for you. It's just a one game bounce back and all of a sudden you're looking good. So good for Drew Hutchinson. That's a good story. June 15th, 2012 was the last time that he was involved in a full game. He had missed 18 months undergoing Tommy John surgery for Drew Hutchinson. So huge positive. I know the rotation's been such a big question mark coming into the season for the Jays, and they got a big positive sign there that Drew Hutchinson, at least early on, very early on, seems to be okay. Tampa's a tough place for the Jays to play, but
it's always been
done.
A tough for them down there. Doesn't matter if the Jays were good, bad, or indifferent. Didn't matter if the Rays were good, bad, or called themselves the Devil Rays. I think it's that goofy roof and just the opaque field. And I don't know, something wrong with that stadium.
Yeah, but something wrong there. But today, Mark Burley going to get his first start, the 15th big league season for him. So it's game 3 of the 4-game set for Toronto to open up there. And then, of course, they're back home coming up on the weekend. I believe it's the New York Yankees.
That's right. We'll have two of those games for you right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan Saturday and Sunday at 11 o'clock. So as the Jays get going. And it's Mark Burley's a guy they've always assumed is going to be, you know, kind of those, you know, guys that can just pile up the innings and just be a workhorse for you. He's getting up there. He's not as young as he used to be, but he is certainly a workhorse.
Yeah, and it's another guy, and it'll be interesting to see how he does in his first game of the season. Again, the rotation's the big question mark for the Jays coming into this season. I mean, the bats are going to be there. The runs are going to come. The Jose Reyes situation, they're optimistic. They think he's going to be back mid-April, so a couple of weeks for Jose Reyes, and he's going to be back in the lineup. So more precautionary maybe to keep him out with the hamstring injury. Let it heal fully before it nags him all season long.
Did I see Jansen is on the DL too as well?
Yeah, Casey Jansen started the season on the DL for the Jays as well. So Sergei Santos is their closer for the start of the season. But a lot of question marks surrounding the Toronto Blue Jays. But hey, I mean, whether you're a fan of the Jays or not, they're the one Canadian team, the one Canadian connection that we have in this country for baseball. So if you're a baseball fan, you're always, you know, kind of morphed into not liking the Jays, but you pay attention to them just because of, you know, the location and who they are.
So the Chicago Cubs, I know you're all decked out today.
It's a game day, huh? What, Cubs t-shirt.
Have they played already?
They did.
And what happened?
A great performance from Jeff Samardzija on the mound, but it goes to waste.
Oh, no.
A 1-0 loss in extra innings.
Oh, no.
A Neil Walker walk-off home run for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh, those Pirates again.
Yeah. But we're back at it for game 2 of the series tonight.
Yeah.
Edwin Jackson on the hill for the Cubs, so here we go.
Yeah, it's a new
back
season.
To 500. Back to 500.
It was awesome when we had, who was our baseball guy that kind of went backwards?
John Manuel.
Yeah, he said, the Cubs probably are going to be dead last. They have no prospects. It's going to be, you know, 2 or 3 years rebuild. It was just, it's like an arrow just right into your heart.
Not even
second last.
Last time we use him on the show.
Yeah, we'll never ask him about the AL Central. You don't know what you're talking about, Manuel. Yeah, what are you talking about? All right, we get out of here. We get Pat to join the show. We'll talk some baseball, talk some hockey, and everything else as the Big Show continues. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Proud to be home for the Calgary Flames and the National Hockey League. Sportsnet 960 The Fan is Calgary's hockey station.